We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Gentlemen, welcome to the 100th episode of Snacky Tunes. I'm half your host, Ted Diabolik, a.k.a. Darren Bresnitz, sitting next to the fabulous DJ Never Forget, a.k.a. Greg Bresnitz.
Yeah, I just got in from L.A. And I had to make a shout-out. I was going to do this as a call-in, but I called Matt last week, and I was like, hey, dude, can you switch your schedule? Like, oh, I don't know what we're doing. And I was like, you know, screw it. I'll just call. And he's like, you should probably just be there.
You were going to do this as a call-in?
Yeah. No, it was like we had like a... We had like a real
talk.
We really talked.
I was driving down La Cienega Boulevard, and he's like, "You just need to. You should be there." And I was
the way, this bottle's provided by the lovely Jordana Rothman, who's coming up in February,
February 13th. But I just want to say thanks. Sometimes you get like kind of tied up, and like everything's going on, and you kind of forget the things that you really want to do.
Well, here's the thing about friends. Friends will call you out on your shit.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing. It's and not only that, it's recognizing that. your friends are just trying to look out for you.
Of course.
So I just want to say, like, that was like, which makes me happy. And actually, it makes me happy that you guys are on here because, seriously, we started this in August 2009 and you guys have been crazy since August 2009. And it's kind of nice that in after all this time, we spent a lot of.
Let's dial it back. So we're talking about episode 100.
Let's dial it back. I'm not like hugging them or anything.
And we're trying to decide what to do. We were going to do a clip show. That got nixed.
No. You thought we were going to do a clip show.
We put it to a vote.
You put it to a vote.
I lost 2-1. It's fair. Yeah, it's
that's yeah, that's our
and
vote.
We have Jack out there.
Jack Inslee. Big shout out to Jack. And
we have Brandon Hoy out there who actually, from Roberta's, it's their 4th anniversary party tonight. And Brandon was the one who was responsible for
helping us
get the show.
But and then so when we decided that we weren't gonna do two of us decided we were gonna do a clip show
out of a 3-person committee.
Yeah, we thought that, like, let's do a family show. And so we have Matt and Kim who are sitting in first, and Pablo Muniz, who's our wonderful culinary producer we work with, but he's actually running late from work. So we're gonna flip it up a little.
Keeping it on the toes. Hey. Maybe this is the new start for the next 100 episodes.
No.
But that's like the
but hey,
no, family, see, what you family guys says is air horns so, to me means go all the way.
Yeah, that's kind of confirmation.
Yeah. So what we decided is that no rules tonight. 100th episode. It's nighttime, and as we know, anytime that we do a nighttime show, it gets a little crazy.
Yeah, so this would be the time
that a gunshot.
This would be the time that I, in the podcast, like to say, Mom, Dad, if you have downloaded this podcast, this might be the time to turn it off.
All right, so let's introduce our guests, Matt and Kim from Brooklyn. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hey, thank you for having us. Thank you, Greg, for making it out. Couldn't do this without.
On the phone. Could not do this on the phone.
No, I know.
And for all of those who don't know who Matt and Kim are, Matt and Kim, tell us who you are.
Matt and Kim, I'm Matt.
And I'm Kim.
That's Kim. And we couldn't think of a better name than our own twos.
Can I ask, did you even consider another name?
Oh, yeah.
We did. Well, all right. Coming up with a name is really hard.
As we know.
I mean, I couldn't imagine coming up with a name for a child, you know, never mind the name for a band. And
did you just put child below band name?
Well, I didn't mean to. I actually meant to put it above, but no.
No, it goes naming your restaurant, naming your band, naming your child.
Yeah.
You can honestly name your child anything.
Well, hey,
seriously.
Listen to my name. Listen to my name real quick. Matt.
Matt Johnson.
My brother's name is Fletcher. Obviously, yeah, he was the first child. No, he got the cool name.
No, they named him after the Chevy Chase movie. Had to.
Yeah.
Had to.
True.
Well, they were not the first one, like Fletcher 6.
Well, you know, the VCR broke, and they're like, well, what are we going to do?
But either way, Kim had a pretend band as a child.
Yes.
That we considered stealing the name of, which
what was
the Scream Team.
The Scream Team consisted of me, my brother, and two of our friends. I played a keyboard that wasn't plugged in. My brother. Seriously, you're really laughing. Really? My brother played flower pots and cardboard boxes turned upside down.
So your parents were hippies?
I guess.
Actually,
I guess.
They're more rock and rollers.
Yeah,
than
more
hippies.
Rock and rollers. But
that's good for
I don't know. We covered such things as Quiet Riot. You know,
the first time I saw you was at that Todd P. Unplugged thing on Randall's Island, and you were playing that cardboard box.
See,
and
I brought it back.
That Casio that was strapped to you with duct or whatever masking tape.
You can see this video on YouTube. For some reason, it has hundreds of thousands of views, but it is really Matt and Kim at their worst. I'd say probably
that was the first time that we met. We had spoken on Williamsburg.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God,
Williamsburg.
Yeah. Let's just talk about that. Was just a shit talking
Wait, what,
site.
What was your what was
it? Was Matt and Kim?
It was Matt and Kim.
Matt and Kim. Brandon, were you on Williamsburg? Bad. He says that. I'm pretty sure Williamsburg was started just by the founders so they could just get laid.
Did they get laid?
All the time.
Really? Did you guys get laid?
Wait, message board laid?
Really?
No. I never.
Is that lower rung than Facebook laid?
Darren, you got laid off of. Don't step.
Wait,
no one can see it, but he like nodded so smugly, like, yeah.
No, I'm thinking about it. I was like, yeah, some things had started on Williamsburg.
But wait, though, this brings me to one of my questions that I have for you guys.
Oh, yeah, tonight.
Yes.
That was planned, by the way.
Yes.
Who gets laid more?
Oh, Really?
Right into that.
Yeah,
right into
seriously. That? Inquiring minds want to know.
I think it trades off.
It trades off.
What do you mean there, it trades off?
There's never...
Like someone has a high point, high month?
I think...
I'm sorry, high year. We won't give you a month.
It's usually a longer year. No, I would say this. Usually one of us has a girlfriend, the other one's single. And it's usually who has a girlfriend is doing better work.
Now, is that because someone cock blocks someone else type of thing?
I don't think we really... I think like our female friends do more cock blocking than like we would ever...
Can I ask a question real quick? Who gets laid more, Matt or Kim?
Kim.
Ooh. A couple things I don't know about here. Huh?
I mean, if we go into history, but...
Oh!
So, right, okay. How did we get... Okay.
All right, so talking about history, how did you two meet?
Okay, so Matt and I both went to Pratt Institute here in Brooklyn.
Art nerds.
Yes, definitely. And I was sitting on a bench with my friend, and Matt walked past, and I looked over, and I said, I am going to fuck the shit out of that dude. And then a couple weeks later, we met. And
the rest just happened as expected. Huh?
Wasn't there a letter?
Yeah, that was the story that you told us. I love that, the food poisoning letter.
Yeah, you
letter.
Told us the much more okay. PG
Well,
thing
yeah, that was... That was technically when Kim had saw me, and she is a couple years older than me, and...
But wait, let's just state...
I was 19 older than 27, I noticed.
She's a couple years older than me. I was a little bit intimidated by her tattoos and her age, and I was just a country boy from Vermont, you know, but she kept hitting on me. She gave me her number three
times. I gave Matt my number three fucking times, and he kept losing it.
Can I tell you something? This is weird, but when we did the interviews or dinner with the band, Matt said something that really stuck with me when we told that story. You said something along the lines like, I always lose the things that are most important to me.
Aww.
No. You said that, and I was
you
like,
"You remember that?
That sounds like, yeah, it sounds like
that's a pretty intense. That's a pretty
well.
Intense
let me tell
line.
You,
sounds like something some a real pussy would say. Huh?
No, Matt is the
man.
Matt,
I held that line such a different way all these years. Wow, way to damage that.
Matt is all right. This is what happens when we go to the airport. As soon as we cross through security, I have to take Matt's boarding pass because from the moment we cross security to the time we get to where we check in. Matt has lost his boarding pass within the 5 minutes.
Where do you, I mean, there's just put it in your
I don't
pocket.
Know.
Just put
wait,
it in your pocket.
I do.
Put it in your front pocket.
It's one of those things. I'm like a child.
Wait, so you lost your number three times.
And okay, then the third time, I was like, you got to be shitting me. I was like, I don't, I was kind of baffled by it.
What year is this again?
This would have been 1983.
So this is like pre-Facebook, pre-MyFace. So
this was pre-me being born.
This is after Makeout Club, right?
It's
oh my god, lipstick and cigarettes is still in effect?
Yeah. Brandon's nodding. He knows what's up.
It was about 9 years ago, I think. And
I'm gonna drop something real quick for the Boston people. XAdamX.com. Fletcher would know.
Yeah.
Fletcher is my brother.
Fletcher and a previous guest on
with
Snacky
the cooler
Tunes.
Name. Yeah,
yeah. And he did a great episode.
An incredible, live. Incredible. Listen back and listen to with Fletcher C. Johnson.
Just look at Snacky Tunes Fletcher Johnson on iTunes Store.
Yeah.
Anyway, so go on.
So where are we at? So I gave you my number on the third time you finally called.
Well, I don't remember anymore of this story. And I feel like even if I do remember it...
It's going to be wrong.
It's not... I feel like...
Okay, fine. Then let's we're gonna fast forward a little bit, then we're going to play a song. At what point did you know that you were together romantically and musically? Was one first or was one second? Like, how did that come happen?
Oh, no. We were hitting it long before we started playing music together.
Mm. So you were making rhythms before making jams?
It all happened in the bedroom, is what I'm saying.
Really?
It all happened in the bedroom.
It did. And I'm actually making our even most recent album in a bedroom again. Like, we make that sweet, sweet, sweet music in that bedroom.
Oh, man. That people sweet, have just shut down.
That sweet. Whether,
all right. So, you know what? I'm going to play.
That was a very awkward point. This is a good time to just get out of this.
Actually, hold on. Keep talking because I got a song I got to queue up.
Oh, no. Is it Let's Get It On? No, I don't even want to try
wish.
To sing that.
You're playing Between the Sheets.
Between the Sheets has been requested.
Yeah. No.
Well, let me just say. So, yeah, we we started learning how to play our instruments in the bedroom on we were on Park Ave at the time.
Park Ave in Clinton Hill.
And now and then we moved to Grand Street, and we're making our most recent album again back in the bedroom, even though we don't technically live in that apartment anymore. Yeah, but I'm glad to be making another album on Grand Street.
Yeah.
And,
well, here we go. We're going to play a little bit. We're going to play the Weeknd Dirty Diana cover as a shout out to your, I guess,
sweet music.
Your coitus and musical relationship. We're here on the 100th episode of Snacky Tunes, Nighttime Edition, which is always. Always great.
And 4-year anniversary of Roberta's.
4-year anniversary of Roberta's, it's a full moon.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. It's a full moon. Here we go. We'll be back with Matt and Kim just a little bit. That Prosecco's making its rounds. Here we go. DD, covered by The Weeknd.
Hi, this is Moby, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Oh, Moby. That was from our seventh episode when he did a cover of Take a Walk on the Wild Side, where Greg and I actually sang backup vocals.
Is this all true?
What's yeah, this, totally this is true. True. But when we were clearing the digital album, like we couldn't get a, like they were fine with it, but they're like, you just gotta get cleared by Lou Reed's people. We're like, so that's not happening. That was like the most nice way of saying no. It's like, yeah, put it on the comp. As long as Lou Reed signs off on it, you'll be totally fine. And I'm like,
we're like, dear Mr.
Did you even
Reed.
Try?
No. I did.
You did?
I did. But I went through Harry Fox. And it was just like, they're like, and
it just, it wasn't working. Anyway, so you're listening to the 100th episode of Snacky Tunes. We have Matt and Kim.
Is there an S in there?
Yeah, episode.
I know we're not supposed to refer to the pre-show, but it is true that Darren did hit a beer bong and he crushed it.
He took it all the way in and then the foam, whatever that means.
All the foam.
So we're hanging out with Matt and Kim. Pablo Muniz is on his way. And,
Pablo Muniz is like Taylor's friend who doesn't actually exist.
No, Pablo's on his way. Look, can I ask a question? So you guys are meeting. You've dated. What was the first conversation of like, we want to make music together? And then we'll move on to other things that aren't music. But I've always wanted to ask you, like, what was that point where it's like, hey, we have fun like eating pizza and making out. Like, well, let's make beats.
Well,
we were making art together.
Yeah,
and you know,
Kim was doing like a whole bunch of my homework too.
Yeah, I was doing.
She was like killing
all
it on
of
my homework.
Matt's homework.
Totally crushing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, really
Matt
great
had to
at my
read
homework.
One book at Pratt, and I read it for him and told him what it was about.
Did you whisper it in his ear?
College. I went through college with reading zero books.
Is this but wait, can wait, I say though, Pratt is
that
an
is
awesome
true.
Wait,
this is not like the Matt and Kim folklore. This is a
no.
Real
this,
story.
Is, this is true. There was one
not,
book I had to
did
read.
Did you not even do like
what
the whole
the
like
book?
Collegiate reading of like Bukowski and things like that?
No, there was. I mean, it was art school, man. There was not a lot of
what
reading
was,
going
what
on.
The, what was the book?
But
I
it was
actually
a,
don't even remember.
It was a mystery novel.
Of Mice and Men.
It was a mystery novel.
It was a choose your own adventure.
Come on, Hardy Boys.
Hardy Boys.
It was a Hardy Boys novel. And yeah, no, Kim it was, read it. She gave me some notes on it, and I wrote a badass book report.
Awesome.
And
hey, by the way, it was,
maybe she wrote it. I'm
guess
not
what?
Sure.
Dr. Claw was the antagonist.
But
so we the thing was we worked well together. I played in other bands with like five dudes before, and
that sounds awesome.
Matt and Dave and John and Brian.
Yeah, and you know, as many bro jobs as we did in the van, it was like it still was unfulfilling. And with Kim,
oh my god,
with Kim,
well, I think Matt, one of the things that on his on tour things, he likes traveling with tampons that aren't his.
There are a lot of tampons on tour.
Well, there's certain things. There was once I was walking off the bus, and there was a note written on the door that was like, "Attention, everyone in the Matt and Kim touring party, I am having my period." And if you would like to avoid me for the next 3 to 5 days, it's probably in your best interest.
No,
big hugs, Kim.
I was PMSing and to stay the fuck away from me.
Yeah.
Wait, it was
so
really what
let's get
said.
Back to the...
Okay, okay. Right,
so we worked well together. And the one thing I realized about being in bands is that it's almost not as good as you are at your instrument. It's about how much you can just hang out and get along. And because you're spending... Think about... All your best friends who are like, oh, we should totally live together.
No.
That would be a great idea. But the coolest people that you want to live with are the worst, or that are your best friends are the worst people to live with because they are like the crazy partiers. And sometimes when you're in a band with that, it's like, take that and put it in a van together. And it becomes really
and
gnarly.
And have them be like, I took all the money and spent it on drugs last night. We don't really have gas money, but we're going to play a show together tonight.
Wait, but can I say, though... Because we talked about Fletcher earlier. Fletcher did once spend all the merch money at a strip club.
He did.
Really?
That's,
he yeah, did.
Guess
at South by Southwest.
Guess,
we had taken him on tour with
we
us.
We got thumbs
and he
up
was,
from Brandon. He approves.
I approve, too. It's, you know, I don't know if it's a bro thing.
We weren't mad. We
it's
were
part of the
like,
bro code.
Yeah.
But
so...
Okay, so you're doing art together. You're reading his books.
I'm reading Matt's books. Matt's book.
Yeah, my college book that I read.
And I decided I wanted to learn how to play the drums. And so...
Why did you want to learn drums?
I went and I saw the Dickies perform, and I just kind of mid-show was like, turned to my friend Jordan and was like, I'm going to learn how to play the drums. And so my friend Ian gave me his hand-me-down set, and I set it up in the bedroom, and I started trying to figure out how to play the drums. And Matt had a keyboard that he found in a friend's barn... Right?
Garage.
And
it's Vermont, same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so we just kind of, instead of, you know, practicing by ourselves, we just started together. I mean, we weren't trying to start a band at all. And then that same friend, Ian, who's in...
Sweet, sweet music.
He's in a band called Japanther. And basically, Ian forced us to play our first show. And it was a Todd P show. And we didn't have a band name. And Todd put us down as Kimberly and Matthew. Which is a little too...
Wow.
And then right? And then we became Matt and Kim, and the rest is history.
Welcome. Walking to the studio is our food guest, Pablo Muniz. Here we go. Passing the Prosecco. Oh, so you guys played... So you were Kimberly and Matt, and you're like, the cadence of that is just terrible.
It was Kimberly and Matthew. It just wasn't us. And a lot of people ask, like, why isn't my name first? But... It's going back to the art school way. Graphically, Matt and Kim looks better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, at least that's what I told her.
That's okay. What I paid a professor $20 to tell her.
And so the rest is history. I mean, you know, we can get into the history of Matt and Kim, but we got... Whoa!
But that's what Wikipedia is for, right?
That's what Wikipedia is for. So here's what we're going to do.
I'm just going to do a little glass right here.
We're going to play a song. We're going to do a little bit more Matt and Kim interview, and then they're going to play a set. And then we're going to get into our buddy, Pablo Muniz, culinary producer extraordinaire. If you have any questions for Matt and Kim, hit them up at Matt and Kim on Twitter. Or hit us up at...
Oh, wait. Dad joke.
Dad joke.
You owe us a dad joke.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't really have any that I could think of. That's why I kind of paused on that. That's why I paused on that.
Do you have a dad joke?
I have no dad jokes. Do I look like I would have dad jokes?
What's on you?
You might have a daddy joke. You might have a dad.
You guys want a hip hop? What do you guys want?
Of course, hip hop.
I know what I want to play.
What do you?
What do you got for me? Yeah. Is what I want to know. And it's do not disappoint me.
No, I'm not going to disappoint you. Okay, here we go. It's UGK International Players Anthem.
Oh, I love this song.
Welcome to
This is going out to Atlanta.
Snacky Tunes episode 100.
And
thank you guys for being here.
We got Matt,
awesome.
Kim,
Brandon
Hoy, Pablo,
Kim's
Muniz.
Cousin, Kim's cousin, dude, she's banging.
No.
Best friend.
Sassy gay friend.
Oh. Apologies. That's my own preconceived judgment. I apologize. I'm sorry.
See, what he doesn't realize is I've desperately been looking for a sassy gay friend. And so I'm going to work the moves tonight and see what happens.
And Kim, if anyone knows, she is a game killer. She has no game whatsoever.
Dude, I swear I've hooked one of you up before.
No, you haven't. What you have done is you've been like, I'm going to hook you up, and then killed any chance.
That's what she's the game killer.
All right, play the Players Anthem.
Here we go.
Play it.
International Players Anthem going out to the 100th episode.
Going out to Kim. Take notes.
So, I typed a text to a girl I used to see, saying that I chose this cutie pie with whom I want to be. And I apologize if this message gets you down. Then I CC'd every girl that I'd CC round town. And hate to see y'all frown, but I'd rather see her smiling. Wetness all around me, true. But I'm no island, peninsula maybe. Makes no sense, I know crazy. Give up all this pussycat that's in my lap. No looking back, spaceships don't come equipped with rear view mirrors. They dip as quick as they can. The atmosphere is now ripped. I'm so like a pimp. I'm glad it's night. So the light from the sun would not burn me on my bum when I shoot the moon. High jump the broom like a preemie out the womb. My partner yelling too soon. Don't do it. Reconsider. Read some litter. Sure on the subject. You sure? Fuck it. You know we got your back like chiropractic. If that bitch do you dirty, we'll wipe her ass out as in detergent. Now hurry, go on to the altar. I know you ain't a pimp, but pimp, remember what I taught you. Keep your heart, three stacks. Keep your heart, hey, keep your heart, three stacks. Keep your heart, man, these girls are smart. Three stacks, these girls are smart. Play your part. My bitch a choosy lover, never fuck without a rubber. Never in the sheets like it on top of the cover. Money on the dresser, drive a compressor. Top notch hoes get the most, not the lesser. Trash like the fuck for $40 in the club. Fucking up the game, bitch, it gets no love. She be cross country giving all that she got. $1,000 a pop, I'm pulling Bentleys off the lot. I smashed up the gray one, bought me a red. Every time we hit the parking lot, we turn head. Some hoes wanna choose, but them bitches too scary. Your bitch chose me, you ain't a pimp, you a fairy.
been rolling solo. Time to get down with the team. The grass is greener on that other side. If you know what I mean, I'll show you shit you've never seen. The seven wonders of the world, world. And I can make you the eighth if you wanna be my girl. When I say my girl, I don't mean my woman. That ain't my style. Need a real street stalker. Stalker, walk a green mile. Be piling up the paper on a dining room table. Cause you able to realize I'm the truth and not a fable. Baby, rockin' Russian sable. Keep that chiller on the rack. What I look like with the $1,000 shit up on my back. I'm a $1 million Mac. They need a $1 billion bitch. Put my pimpin' in your life. Watch your daddy get rich. Easy as ABC. Simple as 1, 2, 3. Get down with UGK. Pimp CBU with B. Cause what's a hoe with no pimp? And what's a pimp with no hoes? Don't be a lame. You know the game and how it goes. We try to get chose.
Any, many decisions with precision. I pick or make my selection on who I choose to be with. Girl, don't touch my protection. I know you want it to slip, but slipping is something I don't do. Tipping for life. That's like making it rain every month on schedule. Let me tell you, get your parasol umbrella, cause it's gonna get wetter. Better prepare you for the sea support. She's supposed to spend it on that baby, but we see she don't.
Ass Paul McCartney. The lawyers couldn't stop this. Slaughter of them pockets had to tie to a rocker.
Send her into outer space. I know he wish he could, cause he paying 20K a day. That bitch is eating good. Like an infant on a double D titty, just getting crumped, cause you miscalculated the next to the last pump.
Dump in the gut, raw from the giddy. Yep, better choose the right one or pick the kitties up.
Choose you. God, that song's so good.
Did you learn anything?
No, you because know, I am not a game
no,
killer.
Okay, so when we went to call, okay, when we went to Callbox Lounge,
she's been thinking
lounge,
about no, this no, no, that whole no, no. song.
Okay, when we went to Callbox Lounge, you're like,
so I typed the text just to see.
She was like, Greg, you see those two girls over there? I was like, yeah. She's like, which one do you want? I was like, not really. I was, you want brown one? I was like, no. You're like, I'm gonna do this for you.
Wait, let's then, just stay. Then, I don't even remember what you're
yeah,
talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly. Yeah. So you go over and you were just like, pouring sweat or dancing, and you're like, what do you think about my friend over there? And they're like,
oh, I do remember.
Yeah,
this
and
movie.
I was no, like,
except,
and I went up and I was
for, except for something like this.
And I was and you like kind of like dragged her over and you're like, dance with her. And we just kind of danced, and I was like, I am so sorry. This is like so. And then they just left. And then they and not with me.
Do
they
you
just
guys
left.
Remember when they tried to kick me out because I started a conga line?
Yeah.
They were not happy about
and
that.
You're like, I'm going to get that girl to put her hands on your hips, and that's my game. That's my move. It's conga line move.
And didn't you guys end the night by taking a taxi cab through McDonald's?
I did.
That was
someone did.
Not
yeah, someone
us.
Did. Yeah.
So here's my question. So you two are on the road together a lot, and Kim, you are a carnivore, and Matt, you are a vegetarian.
Yes.
How do you balance that on the road?
On the road, it's actually really easy.
Because you're going to places that have the options. It's different on at home, because Kim's basically becomes vegetarian just to make it.
Because I don't do all the cooking. You cook the beans.
I have heated up beans in a pot. All
right, let's talk. Yeah. Who's the chef in the relationship?
Kim does way more cooking. She does way more everything than I do.
But you do cook some mean beans.
Some mean. I warm up
some mean
cans
beans.
Of beans.
What type of beans? Kidney, pinto, black?
We do a mixture.
Yeah.
Oh. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a three beans.
Just two. No, not three.
Hot two bean salad.
Two bean salad.
A hot two bean salad. That's fantastic.
I feel like this is a very. We can't end on this topic
right
here.
No, we're not going to talk. Okay. All right. So, you guys.
How do we got to episode 100 by ending on that topic?
How do I talk?
Stop.
No, stop.
Let's talk about home.
No.
You guys are home.
No, yes.
Stop, you've been on stop the. One second. I have an actual question. You guys have been touring now for like 4 or 5 years, and like what you guys have grown and like become.
I don't hear a question.
I'm getting there. It's a lead up. I'm gonna take a dramatic pause. So you guys start off with like, you know, on the van playing, you know, with keyboards, duct tape stuff, and now you guys have done like an amazing thing. You've grown your band. You guys are great. The food has definitely gotten better, right?
Well, I mean, the thing
that's
is...
That's your question?
Well, I had something...
No, that really is my question.
It's like, what did you eat and what do you get
no,
to
eat? I think
when we were in the minivan and it was just the two of us,
yeah,
there was definitely a lot of sandwiches that consisted of peanut butter, Cheerios, and honey.
That was a killer combination.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. It, you know. Honey Nut Cheerios.
Yes.
Believe it. But the thing is, I think the thing that did change since we became not totally poor was that we're not so concerned about. I remember we'd show up to a town and like, oh, you should go to this place. Like, it's really cheap and it's good. And they'd be like, you know, meals are like $8-$9. I was like, that ain't cheap. Like $3.50 is cheap. And that's what that was like,
yeah,
like 5 years ago. And now it's like, oh, someone's like, oh, you should check out this place. It's really good. Meals are like, you know, whatever. Something reasonable, you know, 15, 20 or whatever, you know.
It's reasonable.
Well, either way, it's something that we don't have to be as concerned.
Yeah, we're not as concerned with that.
And I think it does open us up to more things than just eating falafel sandwiches.
Which, and I have to say this, and we've talked to chefs and people like that, there is no problem with people who enjoy, like chefs who enjoy the spectrum of like a Mahmoud's like falafel sandwich and then a high-end dining meal, when you can choose to eat if you're going to eat the low-end or the high-end. When you're constantly eating the low-end, especially which is of like a vegetarian fare on the road, it gets very repetitive.
And it also, that's much harder to find when you're traveling.
But I blame 12 years of public school hot lunch on the fact that I really, you know, I know... You both are, you know, very connected with food and know deep and have a very, like, mature palate. But I feel like that 12 years of public school hot lunch has ruined any...
What was your hot lunch? No joke. I see wings on a menu and I'm always like, that's happening. Like, literally, that my first instinct like that is like...
I guess you, by that compliment, you mean like, I know I shouldn't be eating wings again, but...
But I mean, I eat, you know, my fair, you know, there was like chicken, you know, chicken patty Thursdays.
You know,
and
curly
now,
fries?
Now I eat the veggie chick patties, but I love it. Can't get enough of it. Right. You know, it's one of those things where it's like,
but,
I feel like I don't.
It's also comfort and nostalgia.
What's your brand?
I do the Amy's, I do the Morningstar,
That was my college dinner used to be a box of Morningstar chicken nuggets.
Mine was ramen.
I just like Amy's mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Throw a little tuna
in. It's good.
There.
I just got into Amy's, man, now that I can afford it. It's expensive.
So the question I want to ask is that I was trying to ask earlier. You did have a good question.
Thank you.
I'll give that to you.
Hey.
Episode 100.
Episode 100 finally gives it to me.
Hey, right here.
The guy, you'd be proud. I see that beer bong getting set up.
Yeah. But so
there it is.
So you're home.
Yes.
Which we have talked about at length, not on here.
And we're excited that you're home because we're going to hang out and be homies.
Right?
Yeah.
That's right.
But so what is it about being on the road, which is amazing and obviously, like, you know, what you look for? It's like, what is it that you find about being home that is so great to you? And that, like, what do you feel like it allows you?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, like, we love Brooklyn. Like, we are planning, you know, we've been here for 12 years now, and we are, like, planning our roots here. But I don't know. I don't even know if it, does it even matter if it's Brooklyn? It's kind of being in one, well, no, because we were in Atlanta for a month, and I was so homesick.
It's one of these things. We chose to live here. We chose out of anywhere in the world, and we travel most, for the last 5 years, you know, like, at least,
I mean, you could
200 days a year.
You could be writing a record in the south of France, and you could put it out in
Berlin.
No, we doing what we do, we could really live anywhere. And we do. There's something about New York that even though it's completely ridiculously priced, or the cost of living to the quality of living is shit. You know, all of these things, but for some reason we cannot see living anywhere else. And we get to be here now and sleep in our own bed and try to have relationships with friends and things like that, which is really, you forget that a friendship's like any relationship and it's a two-way street. And the second you're not there and you're not calling them and you're not knowing what's happening, a lot of people write you off.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I have to say, especially in New York and especially in, I think why the four of us have got along so much is that, like, we understand that sometimes you got to put a pin in a friendship for like a month and a half, and it's those people who you can come back to and be like, oh, hey, remember we were hanging out like a month ago? It was like, it feels to me like 2 days ago. That's really sort of what you have to accept, because anybody who's going to make
career out of life on the road, which is musician, producer, you know, working for events, something like that. Like, you have to have people that you can come home to who understand.
But I do feel like you end up connecting with those types of friends, because we have a lot of friends who we don't talk to anymore just because we started touring so much, and, you know.
And they stayed here.
The thing is, it's New York. Like, I know a lot of people who, you know, and I understand the idea of never, of staying here, and I just, like, I don't know. I don't want to say.
Get real. Get real.
Either way, it's one of those things, but if you don't understand it, then you'll just think, oh, they didn't call me for 6 months. So you think I'm going to call you to invite you to my birthday party when I haven't talked to you in 6 months? Well, I haven't been in New York for 6 months, and I was never good at keeping in touch. My brother, me and him have been close our whole lives.
Yeah.
We're a year apart in age. He went to college for 4 years. I never called him once. It doesn't mean that when we lived in the same city.
Hold on, you didn't talk to him for 4 years?
No, I mean, we saw each other on holidays, right, but we never called each other. We're just, I'm not great at keeping in touch.
No.
Can we just say, default, your brother is Fletcher Johnson?
Yeah.
I'd have to say, like, I think that the difference is when you get older, the difference is like, but when you are home, that's when it counts. If you're on the road, totally forgivable. Come home for 3 days on tour and you're like, we're home for 3 days, literally sleeping, doing laundry and going back out. It's within those times that you're home, whether it be a month or 6 months, whatever, that's when people can be like, well, you didn't make the effort, or you did make the effort, or you're like, I'm gonna scale back but make the effort with the handful of people.
But I like that you understand those 3 days home aren't really like
they're not really
home. No,
they don't. They're not. They're like if you're dating someone, you see them. Or if you have, like, just other, like, you know, just, it's like laundry cleaning.
Laundry, bills, cleaning, and sleeping. Packing again.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is, and we're lucky because we have our significant others on the road being each other. And, you know, we do have a tour manager.
Phrasing on that is.
We have a tour manager who has a wife and a child, and I know how much we travel, and it's hard to keep a semblance. I've never had a bus driver that has not been going through a divorce. You know, that like they spend, bus drivers go from one tour to the next, and they're always on the road, and you just can't maintain real relationship like that unless you're together. So I recognize how difficult that is, and I recognize with friendships how difficult that is. And we're here for 6 months making an album, and I'm just psyched to rekindle something.
So what you're saying is, party at your house.
Yeah. Bro jobs for all.
Bro jobs for all. No, well, we're happy to be having you guys around.
I think it's good. And let's hear some music.
Yeah, so we're going to get...
Let's do it.
You guys brought some remixes.
Yeah, what do you want to do first, Matt?
I don't know. I'm going to...
Matt, get over there and get over there and figure out what we're going to do.
We're going to give you guys about like 10 to 15 minutes on the decks.
Okay.
And then we're going to get our...
By decks, you mean I...
And whatever. And then we're going to get the fantastic Paula Muniz, who just came straight for... Can we say where you're working from? Who just came from Dunkin' Donuts shoot?
Silver Cup
out in Queens. He
That's
just came.
Home of 30 Rock.
Dear Kim, Tina Fey.
Kim, my last question is: do you have any questions for us?
That are
I can't say because I know your mom's gonna listen.
No, she's not gonna listen.
No, she's gonna go back.
I'm gonna tell her to not listen.
No, because I know your mom. When you tell her not to listen, she's gonna listen.
But that is the right answer.
But hold on. We've been honest the entire time. Just ask the question.
All right. Which one of you guys likes me more?
Oh, we both like you the same.
No, that doesn't count. No one can like anyone. When you ask your parents who's the favorite, they have a favorite. They're just lying to you. All right. Which one of your parents likes either of you better?
Oh, the answer is they like Joe the best.
I'll put it this way. I think they like us better for different things. They know I call more.
I call quite enough.
I really just think if I have to hear about how you haven't called one more time, I might stop calling.
Do they call you to say that I haven't called?
Anyway, so Matt, I'm going to say that they like you more.
Maybe.
Because
they miss me more. Okay,
that.
Well, listen. So Matt and Kim are going to drop a set.
What's the first couple remixes?
Well, you know, we put some remixes in a playlist, maybe lesser known of our remixes. And we had a new incredible one by Punches in our playlist that played earlier in the show, though. So
we
can rewind it.
Punches EP got finished today.
Yes.
And will be mastered.
Today's a big day.
Yeah. Mastered and coming out like
six weeks. And one of the industry term assets will be the remix we did for Matt and Kim.
Of which Kim you like better.
Are you?
All right, let's just keep moving on.
Hold on. Was the question if I like Matt or Kim better?
No, actually, I was trying to see which one of you guys liked me more. But we can keep expanding on these questions.
We like you both the same.
Nope, it's not true.
Well, let's get out of Kim's bizarre obsession with competitiveness. And
whichever you does a beer bong for us, I like
better. Oh,
designated driver.
This
wrong answer.
It's waiting outside.
This first remix is by Photo Novella of Cameras. This, I don't know. There's a lot of remixes that we kind of solicit and come in, and Punches was incredible. And this one is really good too. And I'm going to just let it roll.
All right, so here we go. Thank you so much to Matt and Kim. They're sticking around and hanging out. We're going to do a short set by Matt and Kim and the Pablo Muniz, famous culinary producer.
And then on to the Roberta's 4-year anniversary party.
Here we go. Matt and Kim, DJ set live on Snacky Tunes.
believe me.
I'm like Sam the Butcher, bringing Alice the meat.
Like Fred Flintstone, jumping around with Paul Beat.
Should I have another ship?
Nah, skip it.
In the back of the ride,
air puff, sweet to whip it.
Robot of cookies all around the neck. Running from the law, the press and the parents.
Is your name Michael Diamond?
No, mine's Clarence.
Fuck downtown,
Manhattan,
the village.
But stop while and you know that it's still
disco back, stopping and you're doing the buzz.
Yo, rock.
Super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Dude, that's the best promo ever.
Oh my god. God damn. Thanks. Brandon Hoy, I love you so much. I mean, the fact that I've known you for, I think, now coming up on 6 years just warms the cockles of my heart. That was just, yeah, those two. That was just that's a awesome. Matt and Kim remix mashup mini set. And they're still chilling out, drinking beer, eating pizza, hanging out. And we are very excited, very, very excited to be joined one of our favorite people, another part of our extended family, Pablo Muniz. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Let's get a little cheer in here.
Jack? Really, Jack?
Thank you.
And can we say, super classy guy brought us a bottle of real champagne.
Was it real champagne?
Yeah, we were chugging on Prosecco. Yeah. He brought us real champagne.
Let me pour this into my plastic cup.
The plastic cup. So for those who don't know Pablo Muniz, he is one of the unsung heroes and one of the masterful men behind so many cooking shows they see on TV. Pablo, give us a short description of what you do as a culinary producer and some of the things you've worked on.
Holy crap.
Yeah, holy crap.
That is that's a big question.
We saved all
right
the hard hitting questions for you, actually.
That's a big question. I do a lot of stuff.
Okay.
It depends on what the production calls for. It's an array of stuff, but it really requires a good culinary knowledge, a good sense of food, which mm-hmm. I come from as a chef. But without that, I mean, there is no way I can do half the stuff I do.
No. I've seen you work magic.
Yeah. We call it pulling stuff out of our ass.
Yes.
When did you start cooking? What's the...
Let's go back. Let's, yeah. What's it called? Rewind it?
That's
right.
A young Pablo,
right him?
Backward.
What, yes.
A young Pablo Luna steps up to the kitchen counter. Yeah,
I'm looking at a photo of you on Jackson Pewter of you and Michael Cirino. What's up, Cirino? Okay. So when did you start cooking? When did you get in, the chef world?
When I was like 8 years old.
Really?
I still had the same facial hair when I was eight because I'm Latino, so I'm hairy. Same shaped head. I think I look exactly the same. I didn't grow much after that. I'm 5'6", so...
He had 5'6", and your parents like, he's going to play basketball, and he's like, no, I'm done growing.
I was like, no, I'm done. I'm done with that. I'm going to bake.
Mother, grandmother, father, grandfather, who was it?
Actually, nobody in my family knew how to cook.
Oh, you were one of those guys?
Yeah.
Who know how to cook, and you're like, I got to
let him tell the story.
Yeah. We're bantering.
No, let him tell the story.
We are bantering.
Okay. It's okay. Pablo, it's okay.
It's okay. Nobody in my family knew how to cook at all. Not a single person in my family. My grandmother would cook a minute steak for about 30 minutes. We would chew it like it was bubble gum.
Yes.
And then try to digest it. And it would sit in your stomach for the next 12 years, breaking down like bubble gum. She wasn't a good cook at all, so I decided that I was going to take up the reins and start to learn how to cook. But I actually was going to be a baker.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the first thing you mastered?
Yeah.
Or felt like you mastered.
Yeah.
If you have to bake for somebody on a date, what do you bake them?
Jiminy crickets.
What type of food is that?
What's that? I don't know.
Ketchup.
I don't know. I think last time I ever cooked on a date was I think my wife. It was I think it was like 5 years ago.
I just need to say he's that good.
Yeah. That's what sealed the deal.
What did you cook for her?
Oh man, holy Christmas! I made her this huge thing. I did like
I bet you did make.
Yeah, I am Latino, as I said, so it makes sense. So I made her. I think I made her crepes, Suzette, basic stuff, and you know, with ricotta cheese in it, and it was nice, homemade stuff.
Let me ask a question. When did you decide that your love for cooking went beyond just like I'm going to cook for my family? When did you start looking to it as a profession?
When some like Italian dude, Jersey City Italian dude, came to my high school. And he stood up in front of all of us, and he was like, hey, listen, you know, kids, I just want to tell you guys, you can become something. I bake for a living. My parents own a bake shop, and I bake for a living. And he came there, and he did this whole spiel, he did this whole thing, and it turned out, like, I ended up going to work for him and his parents, and I watched his parents on a daily basis make cakes and things like that. And lick the spoon and eat out of the buckets. And
then you also got in the kitchen, right?
I ended up washing the dishes and scraping the pans and all that shit. I didn't do anything in that place. And that kid, he was one of those guys that was like, his parents made basic Italian pastry, but he was like, today, you know what I really think this Italian bakery needs? I think it needs some poached pears.
Right.
With some vanilla mousse inside. You know, I think the people of Jersey City really deserve that. And I was like, and I watched him make this stuff, and nobody bought the stuff, and he did all this crap, and I ended up leaving there. And I think when high school ended, I was like, I'm going to go to Johnson & Wales, which is, I don't know if anybody knows.
Providence,
Rhode Island. Represent.
Oh, Rhode Island.
Johnson & Wales is a good school. I'm not saying I had a great social life. I think Johnson & Wales is lots of Johnsons, lots of Wales. I don't think I got laid until my third year.
Oh my God. Was it by a Johnson or a whale?
Oh man,
it looked like a whale.
I'm not gonna comment. I'm not gonna comment on that.
Too many creme brulees.
Let me just say she did not get crepe Suzette.
No, it was a creme brulee.
Whoa. Oh my God. So it was in Johnson & Wales, and
I don't know what type of school it is.
It's like the Harvard of culinary schools.
Yeah.
Sam Mason went there. Did you not know that I'm the color commentary of the food segments?
Did Sam Mason go to Johnson & Wales?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Big shout.
Wait, when were you there?
97 to 2001.
That's when I was in. Yeah, I left Rhode Island in 99.
I lived off of Charles Street.
I lived off of
What was that?
Arnold.
Kim, that doesn't, that doesn't play into the fact that you're 19. Something's not adding up here. I'm not.
I ran away from home really early.
Keeping it consistent.
And so then, after you graduated, did you just do like the normal like chef, like you know, hobo stick on the shoulder, like going from, you know, kitchen to kitchen?
No, I think I went to restaurants. Started working in restaurants while I was in school.
Yeah.
And I started developing the discipline that you would get as a chef. And I think I worked my ass off. I bust my ass in restaurants. I worked in fine dining places. Every city I went, and then I started moving around. I went to Miami. I went to Boston. I went to New York City, and I worked for the best chefs I could possibly find.
Who'd you work for?
I worked for Daniel Boulud for a while.
How was that?
Intense.
Talk to us. Okay. Talk to us what the mindset is of coming in and working as a chef under a master like that, because a lot of people don't understand what that type of discipline is like.
You got to have a lot of confidence in yourself in general. I mean, as a professional, you have to have a lot of confidence to go into a place like that. If you don't, they'll eat you alive and they'll spit you out.
Yeah.
And that's usually what we ended up seeing is every
What's day one like when you get there?
Day one is, let me see, after the ass raping, we have the sous chefs. They ride you pretty hard. And by the way, not a single, when I went to New York City, after my Johnson & Wales career, not a single restaurant asked for my resume to ask if I graduated from Johnson's & Wales.
Yeah.
And they didn't care. They were like, hey, listen, this is at Gramercy Tavern, yeah. Aquavit,
yeah.
Babbo. They all said, hey,
yeah,
chug it up, dude.
Chug it up. Finish that Prosecco. Go for it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They didn't ask for anything. So you're at the restaurant. They didn't ask your resume.
Yeah. So I'm stating now on the air to people is that if you want to be a chef, don't go to school. You don't need the schooling.
That aside, there's been a big movement in like in the news about vocational schools, how they're actually just they just take your money. Because it doesn't actually provide the real world experience that you need. You could spend those 2, 3, 4 years just cooking.
Yeah. The 80 grand that I spent on the corner of Charles Street earning in Providence, Rhode Island, because I lived in a very bad neighborhood, I'm trying to say, of Providence, Rhode Island.
Just slinging?
I was slinging...
slinging yourself?
My hairy Latino leg out on the corner.
Your hash browns, Charles if you will. Street. I've seen you in a dress. You do pretty well. I'm sorry, what's the chef term for tape and tuck?
Whoa.
So, yes. So you're saying that culinary school is not...
It's absolutely worthless. It doesn't matter if you go to the CIA, if you go to the French Culinary Institute, it doesn't matter. Those kids, I eat under the table. I eat them for breakfast. We get all those kids like coming in to Daniel Boulud's restaurant on a weekly basis, and they're coming in with their degrees, and then they're leaving 2 days later crying. And that's what he does.
How many people have made cry?
I have a few. But when I work for Danielle, I've watched men older than me when I was like 23, 24, watch men that were in their 30s cry and leave and never come back.
Can we ask you personally, have you ever cried?
No.
Have you ever gotten
dude, look, are you kidding? Look at
no,
this guy.
I know, hold
on a second. We have worked with Pablo for I going know, on 4 years now. I'm, do you think this guy has...
It's the hardest hitting question we've ever asked. It's the hardest...
It's pretty hard.
100th episode. It's the hardest... It's a
look at him.
Softball. But have you ever gotten... I mean, you've gotten chewed out before, right?
Yeah.
What did you do when you got chewed out?
Well, as a chef, when you get chewed out, I don't know if anybody knows this, but like in it, you know, when you're in a real restaurant, there's no corporate structure. So there's no like, all right, buddy, Paco, we're going to go to human resources. We're going to hash this shit out, Paco.
It's on the line.
And I'm like, it's Pablo. Okay. And they're like, and then I'm like, you know, it's nothing like that. It's nothing like that at all. It's like, listen, can I use
it? Yeah, go for it. It's on. What do we say about online radio?
No rules.
Anything goes.
They're like, listen, you piece of shit. You better get your act together or I'm going to kick you out of here. They'll throw something at you. They will, they'll kick you off. They'll say, go home. Is the biggest thing that Danielle used to do. They'll just say, get your shit, like a top chef. It'd be like...
Pack your knives.
Pack your knives and go, please. Pablo, I don't care what you have to say, Pablo.
Have you been sent home?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you expected to show up the next day?
Yes.
And have you ever had plate of your food thrown out?
What's
have you ever had plate of your food thrown out? Like thrown across the wall?
Yeah. I've had food thrown. I've had bowls of shit thrown at me. Usually, executive chefs of restaurants are sociopaths, We have had chefs that executive chefs that we've dubbed names, and the names that we've dubbed them have been names like what's it called, the Unabomber, Cujo,
beautiful,
because they're usually diabetic. If that can, right. if that can explain anything, no.
Yeah,
diabetic usually explains the you know, the craziness. Diabetic, they're divorced, they're alcoholics, they do drugs, they bang the hostess in the walk-in, they bang the waitress in the walk-in, they bang the bartender in the walk-in, they're banging everybody but their wife.
Oh,
and then
she walks in. Oh.
Really? Thanks for the champagne.
Thanks, color commentary.
That was the first episode
100.
I think one of the funniest things I've ever had a chef tell me one time was, and it was the absolute crudest thing I've ever heard, and with a French accent, was I asked a chef at Danielle, the chef de cuisine, Olivier Muller, if you are listening, my friend, we still have a round two in the streets when you want. Actually, I left there because we got into a...
You got into a fist fight?
Yes, with him, and that was my last day.
Did you punch him out?
Came very close. We had sous chefs, and actually sous chef Eddie Cotton, if he's listening, you dick, he was on Top Chef. He actually was one of the chefs there at the time.
What's the crudest thing?
He said to me, I said to him, Olivier, it's 1 a.m. I've been here since like 9. Can I do anything for you? And he said, he was in the walk-in, and he looked like Hugh Jackman, like the Wolverine, like naked, just like after sweating, but being in the cold Antarctic. Yeah. You know, just with his hands on the walk-in and his, like, steam coming off his neck and his head. And he's just sitting there and he's just like, yes, Pablo, you can jerk my cock until I'm coming. Is that not cool?
No, that's totally fine. That's Jack just bit.
Yeah,
sound
sorry.
Effect master.
Sound effect master. And then you almost knocked him out?
No, and I said, okay, sir. And I went home.
Oh, okay.
No, the fight happened later.
All right, so we're going to pause right here, and we're going to talk about your transition from restaurateur to TV culinary producer. I think the appropriate song is Andrew WK, I Get Wet. Here we are, 100th episode of Snacky Tunes. We'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. Here we go.
the first time that I ever heard that song was at 8 a.m. when I was at the University of Oregon, and I came in to do my radio show back like 10 years ago, and I was like, what is this? And like, oh, it's Andrew WK, I Get Wet, which I continued to play like all the entire record.
That song is so blistering. That song is really
By the way, he's going, we were talking about, he's going on tour to play the whole record like from front to back. And I had to say with Matt, the conspiracy has been confirmed. There were two Andrews.
Yeah, there were two Andrew WKs. It's not a conspiracy anymore.
I know you're shaking your head at me, but like, he was on Dinner with the Band. We know him. We've done work with him. I can say he confirmed it like last year.
There's two guys.
Believe it.
Sean Agnew, R5 Productions, called it like 3 years ago.
I love Sean, but I don't believe it.
Fine. Anyway.
All right, fine. We are in studio with Matt Kim and the wonderful, they're wonderful, and the also wonderful Pablo Muniz.
And Kim's cousin. And the gay best friend.
Gay best friend.
He's my new best friend.
Yeah. The Kim and Kim's cousin are going to have a fight for gay best friend. No? Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, it was kind of offensive. I'm sorry. It's kind of offensive.
It's okay.
Not really, I'm just kidding.
Okay, episode.
See, he's got sass. This is why he's gonna be my new best friend.
He outsassed me.
Red wine and popcorn.
Give that guy
some more prosecco. All right, so we're here with Pablo Muniz.
It's on my way out.
When you guys get together, you guys are like the three
best friends. So we're here with Pablo Muniz, and Pablo is start off in the culinary world as a chef working for like Daniel Boulud and a bunch of people. When did you make this transition from working at restaurants to getting into television and food styling?
I guess like some chefs, I guess at some point you have to make the decision, am I going to be a line cook for 13 years?
Right.
And, you know,
banging waitresses in the walk-in?
After 13 years, you're not banging anything. You're more than likely banging, you know, a drug or... More than likely, you know, you're just.
Oh, it just got real.
It just got real. Yeah. No. We have a saying. It's like if you're a line cook for more than, you know, past the age of 23, more than likely you better start figuring out what you want to do or just get out.
Well, did you ever want to open up your own place?
No.
Never.
No. Really? I thought I did.
Muniz.
Yeah. That has a nice ring to it.
Yeah.
It actually does.
But not really.
I could go to Muniz on South Beach.
On South Beach. Yeah. 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 I'll have the hostess. Will be Freddy. And be like.
So you're like I don't want to be on the line.
Well, one of the things, like I said, you come to terms with is like, what am I doing? Do I want to be? So I ended up becoming a sous chef of a restaurant. I almost became a sous chef of DB Bistro, and okay. Then I became a chef de cuisine. And yeah, I guess later on in life you realize, you know, I guess one of the things I always point out to students that come to me and talk to me about I love to cook. It's like, well, okay, there's two things. If you love to cook, you also have to remember that the other passion has to be restaurants as well in order for you to work in restaurants and to continue to work in restaurants. If you don't have the passion for restaurants, just have the passion to cook and find something to do with it.
Yeah.
But I had no passion for restaurants. The pay, I had a chef tell me when I was 17 years old or 16 years old, tell me, you know, I want to have a family, and he had a family, and yeah. He told me, he said that the only time I ever see my kids is when they're asleep. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I see them at night when they're in bed because I come home so late.
Right.
And then I come home, and then in the morning, you know, they're sleeping because I have to get up so early to go to work. And he never saw his family, and he said, you know, and the pay is crap. And the same thing, when you work for someone like Danielle, kudos to Daniel Boulud, but their pay rate is shit. You can't afford to live on your own. It's really bad.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. There's one Danielle. There's one Danny Meyer. There's one Bobby Flay. Exactly. One Mario Batali. I mean, there's a lot of guys who spent a perfect empire.
It's true. But you got... Is that Kid in Play?
Yeah.
I think I just saw Kid in Play. Is that Kid from Kid in Play?
Yeah.
All right, great. Or is that Lisa Bonet?
I think it's a young Robert Smith who works at Roberta's.
Okay, great.
Okay, so you decided to make the change, and how did you? Because getting into, I think, the food styling world is just as tough as getting in. It's if not tougher than getting into like the working the line.
Yeah, no, it's tough because you know, working in a restaurant, there's no, it's like no holds barred. It's like MMA fighting. There's some rules, but you know, if you kick someone in the nuts, the referee's gonna get you. But if you like, you know, if you smack some guy in the face, he's not. They're not gonna. They're not gonna. Right. They're not gonna bother you. They're not gonna be like, "Hey, listen, stop the fight, guys. That's unfair."
Right.
All right. No, it's like you have to learn. You have to kind of shift gears. I sent my resume out to food stylists because food stylists are not chefs. So that the problem is that food stylists, they look at chefs as being chefs. I'll explain. Is they don't consider themselves chefs. They consider themselves food stylists. They think chefs are guys that just want to put out a plate. I want to, cook some steak and some hash browns and potatoes and shit and throw it out. And they don't want that. They want somebody that can come in, take their time, you know, rethink how they're going to cook food.
Right.
Deconstruct it, reconstruct it, and put it out for a editorial, for a video, for TV, for commercials, whatever it's going to be. And so I sent out, I think in my first year, I sent out about 8 emails to some of the top food stylists in South Florida.
From your AOL account? Which you still have? You still have AOL.com, by the way. So does Kim?
I have Hotmail. Ballin'.
Awesome. Okay, so Hotmail and AOL.
That's the official email address of poor people everywhere.
Okay, so you send out your 8 emails from AOL.com. Do they still do that thing where they delete it if you have over 100 emails in the account?
I've missed so many jobs because I haven't checked my
email. This is the 100th episode. I'm not sure if you guys want to die on your first, on your 100th, on
so
your 100th
so
episode.
You send out all
Wait. Let's just say, by the way, mine was a quote from Up All Night. Just so you know.
And mine was ska weed because I was into ska and smoked weed.
you're really just coming all out on the 100th. Okay.
They're not listening anymore. They've disowned us.
So you've sent out your eight resumes.
I got 7 fuck yous and one hey, come help me do this job. And it turned out to be a butch woman who was completely confident, didn't care if she taught somebody her secrets and shit. Everybody else seemed to care. She didn't. And she brought me in and brought me under her wing and for like 3 years
give
in South Florida.
Shout out.
Michelle Maurer for 3 years in South Florida. When I lived there in Miami, she taught me how to food style.
You know what? It's really the people who can teach the people underneath them who really succeed. Because it's those people who can like teach you to do the basics while she grows whatever she needs to grow.
Well, you're not going to die with your secrets, for Christ's sake. I mean, you're gonna keep on moving. And
of course.
And then I also met somebody through Michelle, was a guy named Rick Ellis, who I work with tonight.
Yeah.
And he's the same guy that he took me under his wing and trained me for the past 5 years. And then I met you.
Yes, we actually met when I was doing Kitchen Conspirators, and Kim Martin and Francis Allswang said, we have a culinary producer for you. Pablo Muniz coming out from Miami, and you came up and you were living in Jersey at the time, right?
Yeah, I was living back and forth from Florida to New Jersey, staying with my parents, because the problem was is that when you come into the food styling world, and like anybody that's hungry in this industry, like even musicians, for instance, you know, you're hungry to do stuff, you've got to just do.
Yeah,
you can't say no. I had to say yes to jobs, and then when they were like, somebody would be like, "Hey, listen, hey Pablo, listen, we have a job on Thursday. It's Tuesday. We have a meeting tomorrow, Wednesday. It's in New York City," and I'm like,
"All right, so yeah. We're on a plane."
I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sitting in my backyard, like with my dogs and like in the sun in Miami," and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm here in Jersey, just chilling."
Yeah.
I'll be there stat pronto. And I'd get on a goddamn flight like the red eye and be there in the morning, and I would get there because they don't pay locals.
They pay locals.
They won't pay to fly you out.
Well, I will say this, one of the things that I love about working with you is that you understand food beyond style. You know, I've worked with food stylists and I've worked, but you know, the thing about you is you really are a culinary producer. Like, we have done, you know, just to tip my hat to you, you've done Kitchen Conspirators, you did Blaze Off, Reinventing the Meal, Dinner with the Band, Kelsey's Essentials, I mean, the what else, you know, every Bobby Flay production since who knows when. I mean, you beyond just making food look good, you understand food, which is not the case of every food stylist or things like that. You actually understand. I saw this man do a vertical shoot of this like egg and cheese sandwich where he did some things with Velveeta that would like blow Picasso's mind. Picasso would kneel down in front of his Velveeta.
Both named Pablo.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a bit dirty.
And so what is it that you really enjoy about being a culinary producer?
I love this industry, and meeting you and your brother. Actually, when I met you, and then I met Greg, I think the first thing that happened was obviously what usually happens when they meet you, because you guys are both identical twins, is people start talking to you, and then I was talking to you as if you were Darren, and I was like, holy crap, you have a twin brother. Yeah.
As it does happen. But so do you feel that you have like advantage over other food stylists because you do have such a strong culinary background?
I don't have any advantage of a food stylist. I think I have another advantage of a culinary producers. I think culinary producers out there, a lot of them don't have the background that I have in food. And I think I'm just starting. I'm honing my skills as a culinary producer. But I think that a lot of food stylists out there, they don't have the true understanding of food. So
let's wrap this up with two questions. What do you see as the future, or what do you see the trends of culinary producers moving towards, and what advice can you give to somebody who wants to get into like culinary producing and food styling?
I think if you want to be a food stylist or culinary producer, and you get some restaurant experience, learn how to, because the production world is you need to have some really, really thick skin. You need to really, yes, be able to deal with a lot of pressure, a lot of high stress. Restaurants gear you up for that type of stuff, but it also teaches you how to cook. You can work for Daniel Boulud, work for 6 months in a place like that, maybe even a year, and you'll learn more than you'll ever learn in any place in 5 years. So go to those places, learn about food, fall in love with food, bounce out of there. Know that you can take the shit and come into production, which is the same exact thing. Production people,
which is just as tough, because you also have so much money. Each day is like so
exactly.
much money on the line.
I've learned a lot from Darren in terms of like how he deals with people and type of stuff.
And likewise, you. I have to say, one of my favorite people in the world to work with, Pablo.
I'm in love with you.
We'll drink some whiskey after this.
We'll get some bro drops after this.
No, but it's really not. I have to say, if anybody's out there listening who does food shows, if you want someone who's just going to be like a general for you, Pablo Muniz, he's the best.
It's the last sound effect.
I mean, let's be honest.
I'm not sure what to say.
We've worked together now for 4 years.
Feels like forever.
Forever. Pablo's also the only one that's ever kicked me out of my own kitchen in my house. Yeah, it's because you were eating all the food.
Yeah, when you mentioned chicken wings earlier, like the first thing, like, it was like a sting, like one of those memories, like of you just. Watching you eat like a wing is like it's like watching like you're scratching your fingers on a chalkboard.
Literally,
eat every part of it, and it's like and it doesn't matter. I'm like that's got to be bone, and you're like,
I got that.
You just get it.
So both my grandmother and my father both have their teeth missing from cracking them on bones, from trying to get the marrow. So it's
liquid gold, whatever it is.
Anyway, Pablo, thank you so much.
Thank you
for joining us. Thank you for being here.
Congratulations on your 100th episode.
And thank you, Matt and Kim, Kim's cousin's best friend who left. Where'd he go?
He's gone.
He was offended. Was he offended?
No, he wasn't.
He was having anyway.
Big shout out to Jack Inslee,
Patrick Martins, guys.
Rectech, Carlos, Roberta's, everybody. They're loading in the beer for the fourth.
Do you see how many cases of Budweiser living?
Oh my god!
I saw the amount of acid.
Hey, hold on a second. Let's get real. Let's do 10 seconds each of realness. You go.
I'm really happy that we did this. We started this show out of an answer to frustration from other projects, and it eventually turned into something that I like come to cherish. I do really want to thank Heritage Radio Network for honestly giving us 100% creative control over this show. They have never told us what to do, except for the first day when Jack said, you have to have a food element part of this, which was the best suggestion that he ever gave to us, but yeah. It's been 100 hours. 100 out. Well, I guess 101 hours. A little bit more than that, depending, or a little bit less, depending on who we were interviewing. But this has been an unbelievable. I'm excited. We have the second comp coming out. It's been amazing. You can like really, really track. Like, I don't think many people get the opportunity to track like how their lives have changed and grown from. Seriously, like, we went through dinner with the band on this.
Yeah,
went through like you know,
went through nothing.
Went through nothing. Went through getting the jobs, being on the road, and everything. And like, I have to say, you know, it's been amazing covering for each other, for when we're both here, for when we're not here. Like, it's been amazing. And like, I don't know what I would do with it. I never thought this would actually amount to anything other than something that we would do once a week, but it actually has come to be one of the most important things in my entire life, and I can't wait for the next 100.
Yeah, and I have to say that just, you know, like I said, we've had it in the good times and in the bad times, and it's always been the beacon, and to start our week every Monday, to come here, to come home,
it's just been amazing. And to like sit with like people we consider new friends, family, like you guys, it's been amazing. Like it's tough to really explain to people when we do it, and to say that we did 100 episodes of this, it just amazes me that people want to come on and hang out with us for a week, and we laugh and we talk and we get deep and we get bawdy and it's fun. But it really has become one of the guiding points in our life, and it's just to do this for 2.5 years now, 3 years, and to do another 2.5 years, we can only be so lucky. And I have to say to my brother and to my partner Kaim, I couldn't do it with anybody better. It's so much fun, and like we really have each other's back, and like to look back on this and like share it with whoever, it's just been amazing. And a final thing, if they made it all the way through, to mom and dad, we love you.
We love you very much.
Thank you for all the support. Thank you for bearing with your sons who might have taken different paths, but for being there for us. And like,
and, we truly and for love anyone you. Who knows our parents, we are your children. We share your hard work and dedication and drive. And we just want to make the community better, the people better, and food taste better, and music sound better with everyone.
So what are you going to take us out with?
I'm going to take us out with a song that means a lot to us from a show that influenced a lot about who we are. It's Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet Having an Average Weekend. It's the theme song to Kids in the Hall. And wow. It's really just like, I know that you and I spent so many hours watching it together growing up, and it's like part of our American roots, part of our Canadian roots. And there's something about the five of them who got together when they didn't know what they were doing and just worked really hard and doing something new every week. And I knew we took a lot of, you know, their humor and their craziness. And I was actually watching a bunch of episodes today, just like mentally preparing for the show, because I just have nothing but respect for just anybody who can, like the three people sitting in front of me and sitting in this restaurant who just be like, I'm just, you know, all right. Who just, there is no path. It's just, we're anyway, just going
to
do it.
So here's, cheers. Here's to 100 more.
100
Thank
more
you
episodes.
Guys for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
For listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.